Hey, Doc Danny here, and I just want to say thank you for listening to the PT Entrepreneur Podcast. If you want to get involved in the conversation and get your questions answered and feedback from myself and 1,500 other people within the PT Entrepreneur community, head over to Facebook and join the PT Entrepreneurs Facebook group. This is a great group for anybody that is in business or thinking about going into business for themselves and wants the support of other people like me and other practitioners out there that are entrepreneurs. So guys, thanks for listening. Enjoy this episode. So here's the question. How do physical therapists like us, who don't want to see 30 patients a day, who don't want to work home health, and have real student loans, create a career and life for ourselves that we've always dreamed about? This is the question, and this podcast is the answer. My name is Danny Matei, and welcome to the PT Entrepreneur Podcast. What's going on, guys? Doc Danny here with the PT Entrepreneur Podcast. And I want to, first of all, thank you for joining me on the podcast today. Those of you that maybe are new to this podcast, maybe you grabbed a copy of my book and you're like, what's this guy all about? Check out his podcast. I appreciate you. If you're a new listener, thank you for tuning in. If you've been listening for a long time and you're an OG, thanks for sticking around and hanging with me. And hopefully I continue to give you a lot of, you know, a lot of value and insight and things that want to make you come back and keep listening to the podcast and share it with your friends. So I appreciate all of you guys hanging with me today on the podcast. I know your time is valuable and you got a lot of things to do. So if you're driving your car, if you're cutting your grass, if you're working out, whatever it is that you're doing, you're probably multitasking, doing something else like I typically do when I listen to podcast. And first of all, I want to give everybody a quick update on the book. We are right at 1,000 books that we have sold since the launch of the book. This was, I guess, about 2 weeks ago. At this point, I take it back, just about a week and a half. So we hit 1,000. We were hoping to get 500 out, and we got to 1,000, and it's crazy. And I've gotten such really, honestly, cool feedback from people that have learned things from the book. And my intent with this book, by the way, that is really to teach people what I wish I would have known when I started my practice. I look at it more like a manual, more like a handbook than an actual book. So if you haven't got a copy of that yet, head over to finsurancebook.com. You can get a copy of it for yourself as well. It's free. All you got to do is just pay for shipping. It's $7.95, and we'll send it to you anywhere in the world. Like I said, my wife is that we've had some issues with some of the international orders, having to like manually mail out books to like Kazakhstan and stuff like that, which is kind of crazy to think about, but we're doing it. So if you order one, we're sending it to you. So today, what I wanted to get into was a topic that I think, I don't know, it's not talked about enough. And it's something that, you know, I've learned how to deal with more as I've gotten into business for myself. And that is how to deal with negative events. In particular, negative events when they come in terms of your business or entrepreneurial things that you're trying to do. So I just kind of talked about this, you know, big win for us of getting 1,000 books out all over the world within the first, you know, 1 to 2 weeks of us actually having it available, which is amazing. But in that same time, we've actually had three kind of, I would say, pretty negative things happen within, within our businesses. And you know, sometimes the negative things that happen can really put you in a bad place. They can, limit your desire to want to keep trying to do the thing that you're passionate about, you know, and that you're trying to continue to grow and impact others and help people. The good comes, you got to take the good with the bad. And in particular, if you are deciding to go into business for yourself, I get this a lot where people, they swing one direction or the other too easily when it comes to positive or negative things that happen within their business. You know, they have a good day and maybe, you know, they have, a personal record number of people they see in that day. Maybe it's the first time you saw five people in a day as a cash practice owner. Maybe the first time that you hit, you know, I don't know, 30 people in a month, something like that. and you're excited, you know, you're proving that this works. And then all of a sudden, you know, for whatever reason, you have a couple of weeks where it's like crickets. So we go through this roller coaster of, oh shit, this is awesome, I'm crushing it, to, oh crap, I'm going to go out of business in a couple of weeks. Like, I better start figuring out what I'm going to do from here. And these swings are irrational, and they're not realistically what's happening. It's just hard to see when you're in that moment what's going on. Like, if you're standing back looking at a roller coaster, you know, you realize like, yeah, okay, this thing goes up and then it goes down and it turns and it goes up again, it goes down. And, you know, you can see all that stuff from a distance, which is one of the reasons why it's so helpful to have somebody like, you know, a business coach or be involved in like a mastermind group like we have, because we have people that are looking at these things from a distance while you're on the ride, you know. And when you're on the ride, you feel everything. You feel the ups, you feel the downs, you know, and you're not quite sure sometimes if you're going the right direction. And it can be really helpful to be able to, you know, disassociate yourself somewhat from the results of your business. And that's a hard thing to do. And I'm not saying that you need to completely be just, you know, a Zen Buddhist monk about it, you know, and I don't know, totally disassociate from positive, negative things that are happening within your business or life. But what I'm saying is you have to be able to be a little more level-headed. And in particular, when things go well, you know, don't act like you've been there before. Don't like just go crazy and celebrate it. And in particular, spend all the money that you just brought in. That's a really bad move. Let me go ahead and preface that. Like, just because you have two good weeks doesn't mean you need to go buy a BMW. Okay. Hold on to that shit. It's called cash flow. And it's so that when you have a couple bad weeks, you know, you're not going to go out of business. So number one, understand like you need to really look at this long-term perspective. But the other side of it is, you know, when you have negative things that happen, is how do you deal with that stuff? So I'm going to openly kind of talk about some things that happen with us. You know, I don't think it's any secret or there's really no reason to keep any secret. It's not like, whatever. It's nothing different than a lot of other businesses deal with. It just so happens that you might have a glimpse into what, you know, our businesses look like and what we're dealing with. So in this past week, like I said, we had this great, you know, moment where you become a published author and 1,000 people say they are interested in the shit you have to say, which is crazy. And I'm very proud of that. That's that was unexpected. But then we look at, okay, we had our first true, what I would say, bad customer interaction, not interaction, but feedback with a negative review that was written on our business. Not even just negative, but like pretty personal review on one of our providers who we know is a really, you know, just a good person and a good provider, but just honest, you know, good person. And it's unnecessary for people to, you know, if you're going to leave constructive feedback, if you feel like we did something wrong, like that's on me and Ashley, that's our fault. You know, you got to leave our providers personally out of certain things that you think maybe we could have done better, because it's not fair to that person. So we got some negative feedback, both, you know, in the form of a review, but also in the form of talking to this individual in a conversation, email, and having to, you know, try to honestly appease somebody that was, I think no matter where he went, it wouldn't have been a good situation. And I feel like this is where we like to take the approach of the idea of the obstacle is the way. So it was a book that's written by Ryan Holiday. It's all about this sort of like modern approach to stoicism. And what he talks a lot about is just the idea of, when something negative happens, there's two ways to go about it. You can shut down, you can blame others, and you can take it in a really negative way. Or you can say to yourself, okay, this is on us. What can we do to learn from this? Like, what can we do to improve our business, our systems, our whatever processes going forward so that there's less likelihood that this ever happens again and potentially, hopefully, never happens again. The same thing can be said with the book Extreme Ownership, which is written by a man named Jocko Willink, who has a really popular podcast and has written a couple really, really good kids books, which I've read both of them to our kids. It's called The Way of the Warrior Kid. And, you know, just really solid information about, you know, being mentally tough, dealing with things that you're afraid of, or dealing with failures and things that, you know, go the wrong way. And this is all stuff based off of, you know, his time when he was in the Navy SEALs and things he learned primarily in a combat setting, which, you know, the implications of something going wrong there versus in business are totally different, right? So it's, you can learn a lot from somebody like that. And one thing that he says, and I really, really like this approach is, you know, if something negative happens, he always responds with good, right? So okay, we get a bad customer experience and review, good. Now we get an opportunity to figure out what we could improve from this, how we can improve from this this negative review, this negative feedback, this poor customer experience, so that going forward, we have an even better customer experience, an even better patient experience for the people that come and work with us, right? So taking that, and instead of just, you know, blaming it on this guy who, like I said, I mean, I don't know what his deal is, man. Like he must be having some shit going on in his life that is not good. Like he's unhappy. Something's not right with this guy. And I think we were one of the places that he's deciding that he wants to take it out on. And, you know, there's nothing I can do about that, but are there things that we could have caught on the front end? I think so. And, and that's what we're working on. So we're taking this approach of, you know, looking at it in terms of, you know, Jocko Willink's approach with extreme ownership and Ryan Holiday's approach with the obstacle is the way. And we're going to figure out, okay, how can we get better? The other thing we learned about is when you get a negative review on Google in particular, there definitely are things you can do if you feel like it is a breach of Google's review rules. So basically, there are certain things you can't say on a Google review. In particular, you can't personally attack others within a business. That is a breach of Google's policy. And if that happens, and if you get a review like this that is just blatantly personally attacking somebody within your business, you can actually contact them to petition to have it removed. And it has to have broken, you know, some of their policies. And so anyway, I did this when we found out that, you know, we had gotten just this such a just bad personal negative review. And I actually reached out to them, called them, and the lady that I talked to, she, you know, typically has to have like a manager review it, but she read the review and said that it basically broke every policy that they had in terms of what was allowed. And we were able to get it removed in the course of a couple of days. And it's because that's not what they want, is constructive feedback, opinions. Like, you know, this was my experience. This is what I wish, you know, would have been better or whatever. Or like, I, you know, this is why I'm giving them that review. And something is actually tangibly, you know, potentially we can improve and can respond to. But when it's just a personal attack on somebody, you know, and borderline slander, like there's not much you can do about that in terms of responding to it. And Google doesn't like that either. So they will remove those if you petition to have them removed. So might be something that you'll need to know one day. And for me, I look at this as, okay, this is something that we can improve our systems, our patient experience, just by figuring out what went wrong with this guy. And also, it's a way for me to leverage a teaching point to you guys and people in my mastermind group, to where if something like this ever happens, you know, I can say, okay, here's what you need to do. And I can guide them in the right direction. So this is just, think of it like it's a scar that you get, right? Like, hey, I got this scar from X, Y, and Z. Here's what you don't want to do. Here's what you want to do next. And I look at that as a way that I can learn and help other people. And, you know, it is what it is. It's something that is sort of stressful that we had to go through. But, you know, as you look back on it, there's a lot of positive that comes out of that in terms of the way our business adjusted to it, the way our business is going to go going forward. And, you know, the understanding that we have of how to deal with things like this in the future. So that's number one. Number two is something, it's a bit odd. You know, it's a friend of mine who is a massage therapist, we found out recently, is functioning well outside his scope of practice by doing dry needling as a massage therapist. Not only that, but telling people he's a physical therapist and that I'm mentoring him, which is not happening. It's not, none of that is actually true. And, you know, come to find this out through people that have seen this person and then eventually came to see us, and coaches that we know that work with us that also know this person, that have clients that have gone to see them. And it's very confusing for them when they tell us, oh, yeah, so-and-so is a physical therapist, and they say Danny's mentoring him, and I'm not. You know, it puts us in a bad position, and it's honestly something that this is, you know, not somebody, this is somebody that I know, and it was a strange thing for us to find out, let alone utilization of a technique with no training in it. That's just basically, I mean, just frankly, can be dangerous. You know, if you don't know what you're doing, dry needling is not about where do you put a needle. It's where, more of it is, where do you not put it? You know, like where to not put a needle is probably more important than anything else. So there's a safety concern there in a way as well. So now what does this do for us? Well, now we have to look at, well, what the hell do we do with this situation? You know, like, why is it up to us to deal with? You know, is it something that we need to, you know, go through the correct process of reporting this, of talking to this individual and, you know, seeing if it's just something that as simple as that and we can get it to stop? Is it on us if something negative happens? Because now we know about it, you know, do we need to get our lawyer involved to make sure that, you know, we do everything correctly? Like there's a lot of things associated with this that are a time suck, that are unnecessary if somebody just does the right fucking thing from the beginning, instead of looking at things from the standpoint of breaking rules and standards that are in place for everyone because of unknown reasons of why somebody would do this and drag us into it as well. And it's frustrating, and it also makes us pretty damn mad because we've worked so hard to develop our relationship with the community around us and our reputation, and to have somebody else take our brand, my name, and use it in a way to help facilitate, you know, their business, and to do something that is well outside of their scope of practice is frankly just wrong. And not something that we would ever do by any means, obviously, but that doesn't mean that other people won't as well. And you know, I got some advice from Kelly as I sort of started down this path of, you know, trying to help educate our profession on, you know, the business side of physical therapy if they didn't want to be, you know, in network with practices and how they could make that work. And he said, you know, be careful what you wish for, because heavy is the head that wears the crown. And I know he's been there going on some time now in terms of tip of the spear for a lot of this kind of more movement-based physical therapy, strength conditioning, hybrid stuff. He's gotten a lot of flack. He said they've had their business attacked in a number of different ways. I mean, there's a lot of positive that has come from it, but they've also had to deal with a lot of bullshit that nobody ever hears about. And no need for anybody to hear about it. It's just the cost of doing business. And as your business gets bigger and as you get more exposure, people want to use you more, and they want to take a shot at you sometimes, you know, to help bring themselves up or their business up to a place that's better than where it is. So, you know, this is one of those things that for me, the way that I look at this is, we are not sure what we're going to do about this yet, but I can tell you this much: when you make decisions based on long-term impact of relationships with people, it's the best route to take. When you make short-term decisions based on maybe you can squeeze a little bit of extra money out of somebody by offering a service like, let's say, dry needling that you're not actually allowed to do, and maybe you make a little extra revenue on that on the front end, the problem with that is a short-term decision process, not a long-term decision process. And what happens? What happens if you do hurt somebody? But what happens if that person finds out you're not a physical therapist? Oh, and you can't do dry needling. Then what? You don't really know who you're doing that to, where that person is at, and if they're going to feel like you did that in a manner that put them, you know, in harm's way, or maybe they're having a bad day or a bad month, like the guy that left us some negative feedback, and they decide, you know what? It's not going to be enough to leave a negative review. I'm going to get an attorney involved in this. And next thing you know, you've lost your license. and now you can't practice at all and help people, which is the whole reason why you went back to school, I'm assuming. So you're making short-term decisions, not long-term decisions, and that is going to bite you in the ass eventually. It always will. You can only lie and you can only do the wrong things for people for so long before it catches up with you. And it's over and over and over again. This happens, not just in our profession, but honestly in life in general. And I feel sad for this person. I feel frustrated about it. And I don't really know where he's at with his family life and why he's decided to make these decisions. There might be some other things going on that, you know, that we're unaware of. And there's additional pressure there added to him. I don't know, but I can tell you it's not the right thing to do. And whether we do nothing, eventually this is going to catch up to him and it's going to be something that's going to turn out bad for him because it's not the right thing to do. It's not the ethical thing to do. And if you want to call yourself a PT and do dry needling, you should have gone to school for 7 years like the rest of us instead of going to massage therapy school. So that is additional stress that we don't need, additional time that we don't need, additional resources that we don't want to put out that we're having to spend time on. And the way that we deal with that is by taking a step back and realizing this is the cost of doing business. You know, Ashley and I are pretty callous to this stuff at this point. We've had to deal with a lot of shit along the way the last 5 years. And you know, if this had happened to us 4 years ago, I don't think we would have dealt with this very well. And at this point, what you learn is that you have to be able to disassociate yourself from this somewhat. And the fact that this is somebody that I know makes it a little more personal and harder to disassociate, from what's going on and not just get angry and, you know, upset about it, but be able to look at this, you know, in a lens of what's the best thing for us to do long-term, what's the right thing for us to do long-term, and then we will do that. So always look at things as what are your decisions made off of short-term, you're angry in the moment, or long-term, what's the right thing to do for your business and your people who, because of your business, they pay their mortgage with that. They put food on the table. They're able to, you know, have a life and pay for things and enjoy it because of the revenue produced by the business that you run, essentially, right? So you have to look at it from a long-term perspective. The last thing, and this is the most recent thing, is something else that popped up. And this has to do with our digital business, with Physical Therapy Biz, which is the consulting arm of what we do, where we have our mastermind group and our digital products and the book that we released. And this podcast really is, an element of that. And it was receiving a copyright infringement letter for the utilization of the term cash PT. Now, this is something that this is the second legal letter I've gotten in the mail. And I can tell you, anytime you open a letter and it's from an attorney, it always kind of sucks because they put a bunch of legal jargon in there. They just try to like bully people with words. And the best thing to do, if this ever happens to you, is for you to get another attorney to look at it because they speak the same language, right? It would be like us looking at somebody's documentation, like another physical therapist documentation. If just like your run-of-the-mill person that is not in the medical field was to read a note by a physical therapist, they would have no idea what's going on. They would think it was partially written in a different, you know, language. Well, legal terms can be somewhat similar to that. So if you ever get, you know, some sort of letter in the mail from somebody that doesn't like something that you're doing, whatever it might be, the first thing you need to do is go ahead and get your attorney to take a look at that. And if you are in business for yourself and you don't have a relationship with an attorney, you are missing out on a key element of your business. And I know sometimes people think, oh, they're expensive, they're whatever. Yeah, if you find the right one, they're worth a lot more to you than not having them in particular. And if it's small business stuff, it's not like you have to have this big firm that you put on retainer, right? Like that's just not what you're looking for. You're looking for somebody that is probably more independent, somebody that deals with small businesses, and that's what you want to do. You also have to understand that there's general business attorneys and then there's tons of other ones, right? There's litigators, there's intellectual property attorneys, there's healthcare attorneys, there's all kinds of different attorneys, just like there's all kinds of different subspecialties within physical therapy. So for us, here's what happens. So we get this letter, I read it, I think, man, this is kind of weird because the term cash PT is broadly used within our profession. And I'm definitely not the only one using it, as well as so another person within our field, at least one other person that I know of, got a similar letter basically saying that there's infringement on the term cash PT. So sent it to my attorney. He calls me up. He said, okay, here's the deal. There's a what's called supplemental trademark on the term cash PT, which basically means that it is a term that is used. A supplemental trademark is essentially what somebody gets when they can't prove that they actually can get a trademark on a true trademark. So there's differences. Like an actual trademark, we have, like, our business's name is trademarked. It's an actual trademark. It's easy for us to say this is the name of our business. Like, other people can't name their businesses this within a similar, you know, geographic area to us. And it's trademarked. And it's so that if something ever does happen, it basically speeds up the legal process. So if we trademark something, we've gone through a legal process to say, yep, we own this, this service mark, this trademark, whatever it is, and you're infringing on it. So you need to stop. Otherwise, we're going to sue you. And it speeds up the legal process for that. Now, the problem is a supplemental trademark, you only get when you can't actually get a true trademark, which means it's very weak. And the reason it's very weak is because it's typically with something that is very descriptive, in particular the term cash PT, which is broadly used within our field to describe people that are not taking insurance, essentially. And it's easier than saying physical therapist, because we typically refer to ourselves as PTs because it's shorter to say. So it's purely descriptive, and something that's purely descriptive cannot be trademarked. You know, it would be like somebody trademarking, I don't know, manual therapy or sports PT. You know, like, these are broadly used terms. So the fact that we got something like this and the information we get back from our attorney means there's very little validity to what's going on. But just the fact that we get this in the mail means now we have to deal with it, which means time, money associated with legal fees, you know, and the fact that this is something that what is also unexpected, right? It just adds an extra layer of what's the best way to describe it? Just stress, I guess, to a business, even though this isn't something that we're very concerned with. It's a bit frustrating to have somebody within our own profession really, I don't know, like, try to bully others within the PT field. And that's basically what's happening. I would assume this individual probably thinks, okay, well, we'll probably just abide by this and not actually reach out to attorneys that we have, whether, and, you know, for instance, my general business attorney and my intellectual property attorney, which we have both, and both of them have taken a look at this. And to be honest with you, I don't, and this is where people are getting confused. What do they do with the term cash PT? Can you not say it anymore, right? Can you not refer to it? Can I have it on your website? I'll tell you this much. Don't worry about it. It's very unlikely that there's anything that's going to come from this because it's such a descriptive term. So don't have any confusion with that. You should be able to still use these terms. But on the same note, we find out that the same individual has created a supplemental trademark on the term gym PT, which is something that I have, something called the gym PT blueprint, which is how you start a practice in a gym. And it's a term that I've started calling myself in 2011 when I was actually, like, put in a gym as a physical therapist while still in the Army. And I just referred to myself as a gym PT because I was in a gym. That was where it came from. And plenty of people use that, right? You ever practice in a gym? Cool. You're a gym PT. Awesome. Now, the only reason why somebody would do that is because you'd be directly targeting something that we're doing. So for me, this is just an extra layer of, you know, obviously directly targeting, you know, me and my business, because in some way I must have struck a nerve. And this is what I want you to understand about this. There's two kinds of people. There's abundance mentality people and there's scarcity mentality people. I work with people within our field of physical therapy, you know, cash physical therapy, out-of-network physical therapy, fee-for-service physical therapy, whatever the fuck you want to call it. I don't care. I work with people to help them be able to establish businesses that are not dependent on insurance. And primarily, my wheelhouse is people that have a performance basis, meaning they are very active. They like to assess movement. They have niches in areas that are active, golf, you know, CrossFit or movement-based stuff, runners, triathletes, anybody that is in a health and wellness field, in particular, if they're interested in doing that within a gym, that's my wheelhouse. When people reach out to me, and I get this frequently, people that want to do a, like for instance, I had people that want to do a home health pediatrics cash practice. I know nothing about it. So what do? My friend Jared Carter is a much better fit for that individual. So I send him his way, you know, and it sure is that passing on business to somebody else? Yeah, in a way, but it's a much better fit. It's going to be better for them. It's going to be better for, you know, the right person to help them with that. And it's also something that I know nothing about. So I would struggle to try to learn that business, and it's not what I want to do. So for me, I'm really good at helping a very specific kind of person. Like if you're interested in being a performance-based PT, you know, where you're really a lot of strength and conditioning basis, or you're looking at movement in these different niches of sports or whatever it might be, and you don't want to take insurance, you're in my wheelhouse. If you're not, you need to go talk to somebody else. I can help you find out who that is, but I'm not the right fit for you. And the reason that I can do that and I don't look at it as direct competition is because I have an abundance mindset with this stuff. I try to have an abundance mindset with this stuff. Let me rephrase that. Sometimes it can be really hard. You know, when you see other people doing things that are, you know, semi-similar to you, it can be tough. There's no doubt about that. But when we just focus on what other people are doing, it creates a lot of problems for ourselves. They say, you know, comparison is the thief of happiness. Like if you just go around comparing yourself to other people all the time, you'll start to become very scarcity mindset based, because you're going to be thinking, oh, well, so-and-so is doing this and I'm not doing that, so I need to do this. And, you know, I need to stop them from doing this. And it's like, dude, why don't we just focus on helping as many of the right people as we possibly can instead of protecting our little piece of the pie? How about we make the pie bigger? You know, because there's a lot of us out there and there's a lot of work to be done. And there's a lot of work to be passed around. And in particular, when you find your people, you know, the perfect person for you to work with, that's it. And I promise you, this person's perfect client and my perfect client are not the same person. They're not the same people. It's just not. So, you know, this is a frivolous attempt to try to be protective over something that literally means nothing to my business. Because those people will seek me out. If I can call it whatever the hell I want, it doesn't matter. All this is a waste of my time and resources, and this person's time and resources. And for the sake of, you know, this person in general, I don't even want to say this person's name. I don't want to say anything about his business. I've heard nothing but good things about this person. I don't know him personally, but I've talked to other people that do, and they have nothing but positive things to say about him. But I think what he has done is kind of gone about this the wrong way. And I don't know if he's getting some bad advice or whatever it might be from a mentor or from an attorney, but it's not the right way to go about it. And being protective over something that's a descriptive term in particular is not going to work out well for you. So my advice to you guys is to really be able to try and move towards this abundance mentality versus a scarcity mentality. And I this is something I've had to work probably the hardest on out of anything over the last 5 years, because when you're if you're competitive, right, most people that are going to go into business for themselves are competitive. It's hard to not see someone else as a competitor when, you know, you might be in a similar area or you might have a similar service, and maybe there are some small amount of overlap associated with that. But if you really look at it and think to yourself, man, how can I focus on helping more people? How can I focus on improving what I'm doing? How can I focus on, you know, the mission that I have and the impact that I'm trying to have on my community or on this profession or whatever it might be? All of a sudden, all that energy that you take that is now going to trying to stop other people from doing stuff or trying to take things away from other people, to now it gets directed towards, how do I help more people? How do I impact more people? And your business will grow because of it, you know. And there's work that you have to, you can't just say to yourself, okay, cool, I'm just going to go home. I'm going to sit in a chair for 8 hours a day, and I'm just going to focus intently on developing a mindset of, you know, having abundance and helping as many people as possible. That's going to do not a fucking thing for you. Okay, you have to learn by doing things. You have to learn by exposing yourself to situations in which you have to say, okay, I'm going to practice this technique as hard as this might feel right now, as uncomfortable as this might feel, I'm going to do it. And when you do, you start, it's like a muscle. You start to flex it. You start to strengthen it and get, you know, develop that pattern and develop that habit and develop that viewpoint that you then follow, and it starts to become more normal and less difficult and less difficult. And I can't say that it ever goes to the point where it's just like, I mean, there's no stress or anxiety associated with really having this abundance mentality. Because I can tell you, when I got that letter, you know, if this human being was in front of me, we would have fought for sure. I mean, if I take that back, that wouldn't have happened because it probably would have sued me. We wouldn't have done that. But if it came down to it, I would have liked nothing more than to choke him unconscious, because I was very, very mad about this. And now, after a couple of days, I've calmed down significantly, and I can look at this, you know, in a way where I realize it's just, you know, it's a protective scarcity approach, and it's not something I really want to get involved in, aside from what we are going to have to do just to, you know, protect our business. And the other thing too, what can I learn from this? So we look back on this in terms of this, you know, idea of the obstacle is the way. Cool. This is a negative thing that happened to us, you know, that we're having to deal with. And none of these are terrible, by the way, right? Like, dude, these are freaking first world problems that I'm talking about. You know, I'm not having to try to figure out where I'm going to find water for my kids, but these are the things that to some degree we're having to deal with now. So we'll keep that, you know, take it with a grain of salt. This is as bad as it gets. We're doing all right. So, you know, as I look at this and I think, okay, well, what can I learn from this time and, you know, resource issue that is cause for us? Well, it's okay. Maybe we haven't done a very good job of looking at our business in terms of protecting our own intellectual property and the things that we might need to structure differently. Obviously, descriptive terms aren't going to do you much good. But if you have the name of products, we've done this with our brick and mortar business, right? Like our business is trademarked, and it's so that somebody can't just come and start up an Athlete's Potential in Atlanta, you know, and start to utilize our reputation to be able to leverage their business faster because of that and confuse people. That's what it's for. But we haven't done this within our digital business. As we took a step back, I think we realized, man, we have some holes that we haven't even looked at. We've been too busy trying to, you know, just help people and grow, and we've grown really fast. And because of that, you know, we just haven't really looked at things in terms of covering ourselves the way we should. So this is something that we're learning from that. And, you know, in some way, I'm grateful that that's happened with this experience versus somebody that maybe has a lot more complexity associated with their legal department and could have taken advantage of us a lot more. So anyway, this is where I want to leave this. These are three things that are, you know, things that we've had to deal with. But this, for me, what I'm not telling you this so you understand like some of the things that go on in our business in it's so that you can see how I'm taking a step back to look at this, how my wife is taking a step back to look at this, how my business partners are taking a step back to look at this, and how we can start to practice what we preach and not be hypocritical and tell people all these things about abundance mentality and whatever else. And yet we ourselves can't practice it, because when we're put to the test, this is the real test is not what you tell yourself when no one's around, what you do when no one's around. It's how you act whenever you're in a situation that requires you to either, you know, do what you say you're going to do or do the opposite and be a hypocrite. And this is what you, the way you have to look at it. So remember, the obstacle is the way. If you haven't read that book, I highly recommend it. It's Ryan Holiday is the name of the book, Abundance versus Mentality, or Abundance versus Scarcity. There's a book on that called Abundance. It's actually tiny. So that's like probably a hour long read. You can get that pretty quickly knocked out, faster than most books. But that's a great book as well. You can read about that and get a better idea of, you know, what I'm talking about. So, you know, really taking a step back, looking at things in terms of long-term perspective, doing the right thing for people. And if you do that, if you can do the right thing for people based on long-term decisions, which can be very hard early on, because early on you're broke. You have no money. You know, you're like, yeah, I can do that. I can do that. I can do that. Cause you need some freaking money. You don't have any money and it's stressful. I've been there. It sucks. When you're not sure how you're going to put food on the table for your kids, it's a shitty place to be. And you'll do a lot of stuff in order to get to that point to where you can actually, you know, provide for your family or your basic needs. So if you're in that position, it's easy to make short-term decisions. But if you can look at things as long-term impact, long-term decisions, your business will grow significantly more because of that. You'll be in a much better, a safer, more just insulated place because of that. And you'll be happier because of that, because you're treating people correctly, man. This whole idea of, like, we talked to our kids about this, right? Like, golden rule, like, treat others the way you want them to treat you. That's it. If everybody just followed that, you know, and this is whatever, like, I don't want to get all like woo-woo on people. I think the older I get, the more I start to bias towards really, you know, how important the brain is and how important it is that we treat other people correctly. Because you believe in whatever you want. The reality is, you treat people like shit, they're going to treat you like crap. And a lot of bad things are going to come your way. You do the right thing for other people, lots of positive things happen in your life. People are willing to help you. People are willing to go out of their way to, you know, to just be on your side. And that's because they know that you're genuine in what you're doing. And that's a rare thing, I think, for a lot of people. So bias towards that, if possible, practice what you preach. Don't be hypocritical. And remember, you can always learn something from something negative that happens. And I guarantee you, if you look back in your life at some of the most negative things that have happened to you, there's probably things that you've learned from that that have been incredibly impactful on your life, incredibly important for you to learn. And sometimes you have to learn the hard way. Sometimes you have to get a scar to realize there's a better way to do something, or you shouldn't do something at all, right? And it is what it is. It's how we have to learn sometimes. So keep that in mind as you're dealing with negative things, in particular, if you're just starting your business and you're just getting going and every day is a roller coaster ride. Some days you think you got the world, you know, you got the world figured out and you're going to crush it in business. And in other days you think you're going out of business. I've been there. Try to take a step back and look at it from, what's that roller coaster look like when you're not sitting on it? Because that's what's actually happening to you. It's going to go up, it's going to go down, but as long as you do the right things, you're going to end up in the right place. Your business is going to end up in the right place, and you're going to be successful for whatever capacity that is that you want. So as always, guys, thanks so much for listening. I appreciate it, and we'll catch you next time. You want more cash PT biz help? If so, go get a copy of my book, Fuck Insurance. It's your playbook to successful performance PT practice and never having to deal with insurance again. You can get a free copy at finsurancebook.com. That's finsurancebook.com. Inside this book, you'll learn the direct techniques that we have used to become one of the fastest 100% cash PT practices in the country.